Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to Hip Hop Saved My Life. We basically, as you know, we normally do like a little chat beforehand. We're now doing the chat after our guest has left.
Which feels quite natural.
Yeah, but a lot of podcasts do this.
Yeah.
Kermode and Mayo do this.
Do they?
Yeah.
Exclusive.
Yeah. Well, they tell you on the thing. It's
what
not
do
exclusive.
They do? Talk about what's just happened?
They do the intro to the podcast. I can't believe I've had to think about this. They're doing exactly what we're doing. They do the intro to the podcast at the end.
So are we doing an intro or are we doing an intro or are we recording our small chat?
It's both. A bit of both. Yeah. But the small chat is the intro, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So how have you been... Oh.
Go on.
What have you finish been... each other's
what are you...
sentences.
I've
just been, surviving.
You've been surviving?
Yeah.
How's life?
Good.
Are you allowed to talk about what you've been doing?
Yeah, I think so.
So you've been working on... Basically, Rupert's fucking working on a movie.
Making a feature with Film 4. Well, I'm producing it. But,
yes, but you're in it, aren't you?
No, I'm not in it, no. Well, sort of. It's
you're a voice in it, right?
I'm a voice in it.
So that's in it,
yeah,
isn't it?
I guess, yeah. There's an element of that.
Yeah.
It's called Brian and Charles, based on a short film that we made.
I'm going
to see it on YouTube.
Yeah, the short film is brilliant. Oh, and off the back of the strength of that short film, they're making a film, a movie.
Yeah.
Can you imagine sitting in a podcast for months...
Just knowing that,
just
was
thinking, there's like you're working with this fucking useless prick, and then in the background,
yeah,
he's just getting involved in the movie industry.
It's quietly
insane.
How have you been? What have you've been away? You've literally just flown in today.
Yeah, I just got back from New York. Did four shows in New York. Thank you to anyone who came. Although looking at the stats of the different countries that listen to this podcast, it's unlikely anyone in the USA is listening.
Oh dear, did they listen to you on the night though?
Yes.
The four nights.
Although, here's the thing.
Yeah.
So I did the four nights. I thought the shows went great, right? Yep. They were fun. I'm walking through Greenwich Village or something in here. This woman comes up to me and she goes, was at your show last night? American woman. She goes, I was at your show last night. Really enjoyed it, except for the fact your audience were really like chatty and getting up and down all the time and being a bit rowdy. And I'm not used to that in a comedy gig. And I said, is that... And I'd heard that, by the way. When I was on stage,
thing,
I'd sort of seen it and heard it. And I thought I was just America. Do you know what I mean? I just thought it was... But it turns out it's not.
Did you read it as them being distracted or just...
They were doing that thing that... You know when people haven't...
Food and
you know when people haven't been to stand-up before?
Yeah.
Or they haven't been to a lot of stand-up? Mm. And then the comic says something and they go, yeah, that's like you.
Yeah.
That's like you. That's what you do.
Yeah.
They were doing a lot of that.
Yeah.
And I just thought, oh, this is just America. Mm. They obviously didn't sound like that. But I just thought, oh, this is just Americans. And then like the next night, some guy just started... Some guy from Crawley was in the crowd. And started like shouting out that he's from Crawley.
Plant.
It wasn't a plant.
No.
It derailed the show. You don't plant something to make the show significantly worse.
You're thinking that'd be a big PR thing. Get them in.
But anyway, then I get a message from some woman saying, enjoyed the show. It was nearly ruined by your audience. This is on another night.
Wow.
So this is not all. This is not all isolated to the one night.
Yeah.
This every single night,
bizarre.
The audience are rowdy. So I'm starting to think, so I don't really have particularly rowdy audiences in the UK.
Mm.
So maybe this is just the thing where me plus America equals
chaos.
Cunts.
All cunts.
Yeah. So anyway, I've just come back from that.
Oh, well done.
How do you think this interview with Riz Ahmed's going to go?
I've got a good feeling about it. Yeah. I've got a good feeling about
it. I really hope he does the most deaf story.
Yeah, he'll definitely do that.
Yeah.
I've heard him do it a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I wonder if today you could do a callback that it takes Riz and I a couple of seconds to fully
fathom. A couple of minutes, I think. You're still taking it in now.
I know. I've got to tell you, everybody loves you on this podcast.
No,
you know
stop
that.
It.
I get a lot of good feedback about it.
I get nothing.
I'm your fucking carer.
I get nothing.
We get a lot of good feedback about
fleabag.
You. I can't even bring
you
myself
get a lot of
to
fleabag.
See. Yeah, so much fleabag stuff about you.
Yeah.
But you, listen, I think you're improving.
Thank you.
So anyway, without further delay.
Yeah, we should listen to us talk a bit more. Well, Riz, chat away.
Yeah,
what is that, how Mark Commode and Simon, what's his chops, introduce it?
They do that kind
of... they say it over to you?
They do that meta thing that we do where we go, I wonder how it's... Oh, that went well, didn't it?
Oh, right,
or is this going to go... Ooh. Maybe they do the end bit at the beginning. Fuck.
Oh, well.
Let's anyway.
Let's play it.
Yeah, it's Riz.
This is the Hip Hop Saved My Life podcast. Thank you for listening to the podcast. Hope you enjoy the podcast. Now sit back, because it's time for the podcast.
Welcome to Hip Hop Saved My Life. Normally, Rupert and I do kind of
we haven't seen each other for a while. Maybe we'll do it at the end.
But let's do it at the end, because the reason we're cutting it now is because we've got a bona fide polymath, movie star, rapper, actor, writer, director, just whatever, Riz Ahmed. Hello, Riz.
How you doing, bro?
Good to have you, man.
Thank you for having me on, man.
Thanks for coming.
We're finally meeting.
Yeah, I know. It's kind of weird because we've been just sliding into each other's DMs.
I know.
For years.
Mm. I feel like I shouldn't be here.
It's been a lot of...
Yeah, well, there's a build-up to this
moment,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, but
and
just...
And this is literally, you've just walked in.
Yeah.
It's the first time you've met each other.
Yeah, consider yourself lucky to be a witness.
Is it though? I kind of feel like...
5 minutes?
I feel like I've seen your face so much.
Mm.
And
overexposure, I know.
But also just stalking you.
Yeah.
Same. Weirdly.
That's on social media?
Yeah,
or
a little
bit. Like physically?
Bit of both,
yeah.
Yeah, didn't want to admit to it, but yeah, really
he's really easy to try
now. You should really get some neck curtains,
really.
Thanks,
easy
man. To try.
No, highly visible from the bathroom,
yeah. Well, I just like to give people a Crawley a treat, you know what I mean?
The local press,
but listen, man, thank you so much for coming on our little podcast.
No, I really appreciate it, man. It's a sick podcast, I love what you do. So it's good to finally link up.
So you've just, I mean, the reason, not the main, well, one of the reasons that you're talking to us now is because you've just dropped this new album and this YouTube, not YouTube, this short film that's on YouTube, The Long Goodbye. Mm-hmm. If you haven't seen this film, have you seen it?
No, I haven't.
Mate, the thing is, every time I tell people about it, I want to tell them what happens,
you can't
it,
tell him,
but you can't. That's what, because you it. Said to me, you sent it to me, and you go, "This is it," and you just said, "It's mad," right? And from that, I had no idea what was going to come. It's incredible. It's incredible.
Thank you, bro.
And
thanks a lot.
And
man.
Then when I saw the promo for the album, I think I saw some article about it, or maybe some social media thing. I thought it was about you'd broken up with a girl and like this is what the album was about, but actually it's about your breakup with Britain essentially, right?
Yeah, basically. I mean, it's just using this metaphor of like a romantic relationship that's like a toxic relationship, an abusive relationship, one that you should probably be leaving, you know, one that's been an on-off relationship, and using that to describe my relationship with Britain, you know, which is at its ups and downs, a bit of a low point right now. And it's just a kind of, it's one of those weird ones where I had the idea a few years ago and I kind of thought, yeah, you know, maybe that'd be good for one track. And the more I thought about it, I thought, it's crazy just how cleanly it fits. Because when you go through a breakup, you go through any kind of grieving process in a way of separation, of a relationship breaking down, you go through those stages of like, you know, shock, outrage, anger, bargaining, you know, depression.
Yeah.
You know, then you've got to try and find some self-esteem and some self-love to come out on the other side, you know.
Yeah.
And it just kind of fit perfectly in a way to how I've been navigating in some ways my whole life, but most intensely the last few years.
Yeah.
You know, as a British person, as a British person of colour.
Yeah.
But I don't even think it's necessarily you have to be a person of colour to feel this, you know, to feel like you're suddenly unwanted or that you've kind of, your country's kind of moved the goalposts and it's like a different deal. Like, what?
Yeah.
No, wait, I didn't sign up to that.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
What are we doing now?
Yeah.
In this country, what are we about now?
Yeah.
Like, who do we think we are? Who are we saying is welcome and not welcome? So it is a feeling that I'd felt, and I just think that metaphor became quite a good way of talking about it that isn't like too debatey and like op-ed kind of, you know. It's about how it feels. I think a lot of people talk about this as an intellectual debate and a conversation, oh, multiculturalism, Brexit. Well, I'm not really interested in that, you know. As an artist, I want to talk about how does it feel. And I think a lot of people don't realise how a lot of people feel right now.
Yeah, yeah.
Put them up, put them up. She want to put the walls up. She want to build a border. She ain't got no more love. Put them up, put them up. She wanna call the feds up. She wanna see me get fucked. She wanna see me dead, bruv. I never asked you to move in. You was broke, I was stupid. Yet you used me. We're never gonna last, I knew this. Ask for all my shit back and it takes back. Who this? Went to war for ya. Got in for ya. Britney, you take the piss. Left me in no man's land. Britannia's a bitch.
It's a powerful statement you're making. Do you know what I mean? That whole thing of like, I feel, because of what's happened recently and the political climate, I feel completely detached from my Britishness. You know, that's what you're saying in the, on the record. And I mean, I sort of think the whole thing with Brexit, without getting, you know, too political, but like, the thing that really shocked me and sort of made me sort of plug in to what you were saying was like, I saw this thing. There's this stat about they surveyed people that had voted to leave. And I'm not, by the way, I'm not saying that everyone that voted leave is a racist or anything like that. But a significant proportion of those people believe that if your parents are born in another country, that you are not as British as someone else. So I consider myself, you know, I'm growing up as a British person of Sri Lankan heritage and I'm proud of my heritage, but I consider myself British through and through. And then suddenly you're sort of hit by the news that not everybody feels like that. I mean, that is a thing that everyone's going through, right? That we sort of, you suddenly think, oh shit, I was under the impression that we're all British and I feel British and I grew up in fucking Crawley, do you know what I mean? And now I didn't realise there was a division. Is that something that you've always been conscious of? Because also you did English Stan where you were talking about the schizophrenic relationship between your Pakistani roots and your British heritage, you know, your growing up in Britain. Is that something that's always played in your mind and has just been accelerated?
Well, you know, I think that we all have different identities. We all have different sides to ourselves. You know, we all wear kind of different hats throughout the day. You know, you walk into one room, you leave the Sri Lankan side of yourself at the door. You walk into another room, you leave the British part of yourself at the door. The, you know, the queer side of yourself at the door. Or, you know, different people have different sides to who they are. And I think just for some people, it's just more obvious and more pronounced what some of those divides are. Now, they're not just divides, they're not just liabilities, they're also really enriching. Part of what Inge Stein was talking about was celebrating this multiculturalism. You know, I often think like a lot of what I'm kind of doing with my work, film or TV, is a kind of mongrel manifesto, you know, trying to celebrate this kind of mash-up multiculturalism that makes the world interesting, makes Britain interesting, makes me interesting, makes all of us interesting. Whether or not you're visibly, you know, of a racial minority or not, you know, it's about embracing all the different sides of who you are.
This is England, the bridge we're living in. A kidgery simmering, women in hijabs, syringe pop stars, and the promise of a Patel is a man you star. Where the money you make and the man you are, standing opposite, so we drink too hard. The banks rob you and the news is half the truth, wrapped up in boobs and arse. Pigs hit kids, so bricks hit windows, and the high street burns with broken dreams and herb. Only thing you can't find in Tesco is that and a sense of worth. So hide behind the Benz or furs, go online to find friends or perf, but click the wrong site for a free trial, later detention first.
What I think led me to kind of write this album actually wasn't like Brexit on its own or anything like that. It was actually just kind of like looking, taking a step back and looking at the whole relationship that Britain has had with me and with people like me. And it's exactly what you're saying, isn't it? Like, you turn around and suddenly said, hang on a minute, do people not feel the same way that I feel?
Yeah.
That is like being in a relationship.
Yeah.
Wait, but I thought we were going steady.
Yeah.
I thought we were going to get engaged. We bought a house together. We've got kids together.
Yeah.
What do you mean you never want to get married? I thought at some point we were going to get married.
Yeah.
It's that kind of moment where you turn around and you go, hang on a minute, I've come home and you've changed the locks. It's that feeling.
Yeah.
And that's actually not down to one event. That's down to everything from being 8 years old and your first memory being skinheads putting a knife to your throat through to what's happening with people who've been in this country for 40, 50 years trying to be forcibly deported in this Windrush scandal to the words that's coming out of the Prime Minister's mouth calling African kids AIDS-ridden pickaninnies, calling Muslim women letterboxes.
Yeah.
It's the kind of vitriol that Piers Morgan spouts on, like, you know, Good Morning Britain as though that's like mainstream feeling. You know, have it with your cup of tea and your crumpets, a bit of casual racism. It's to do with the fact that hate crimes have gone up, like, you know, they've more than doubled.
Yeah.
You know, I think they've gone up from 40,000 in 2012 to like over 100,000, you know. You're full of anecdotes of people after Brexit getting racial abuse.
Yeah.
But in a way, bro, it's not even just about Britain.
Yeah.
And this album, you know, I really believe you've got to go specific and really personal and from an emotional, personal place, you know, whatever you make. But this album's about what's happening right now in India.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
where there's a fascist government right now, like orchestrating, you know, riots and going and burning Muslims' homes. This album's about what's happening in Myanmar.
Yeah.
What's happening, you know, in loads of countries around the world.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you know, the weekend I just got to Berlin for the Berlin Film Festival for my new film. There was a shooting in a shisha lounge from a you know, white nationalist. So it's kind of about something that's quite global right now that a lot of people are feeling, which is like, wow, I'm suddenly unwanted in my own home, and it's a home that I built, and it is a heartbreak. It's a feeling of heartbreak, you know. It's not about getting into a, like, Facebook comment debate. It's about, like, let me just tell you, really honestly, wear my heart on my sleeve, how it feels.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, it's a great record. It's a wicked album. And like,
thank you, bro.
It's been really well received as well. Both the film and the album have been.
Don't make me smash your melon up. Try throwing shade on melanin. Send them seven up. I'm better bitter with the lemon in. They put their boots on our ground. I put my roots in their ground. I put my truth in their sound. I spit my truth and it's brown. I don't give a fuck about the cash stack. With a crown on your skull, you ain't Basquiat. With a prince of Denmark, a city boy presenting benchmarks. The white kids wanna be back, say yo brown. Planet is gonna be that, the man frown. Panic, I wanna be out, but I'm outstanding cause I stand out. Where I was standing is gonna be plaques as my house. My house. My truth and it's brown.
But the thing is that, because, like, you just talked about going to promote your film or whatever, you are a bona fide movie star, right? In I would argue, possibly the best Star Wars film ever.
People say that.
Mate.
People love Rogue One.
Is fucking sick. it's unbelievable.
Do you know what? It's such a lesson in, like, you never know what's going to work or isn't. Because I can tell you, making that was a shit show.
Really?
Yeah. Why? I mean, making all of these big films is a shit show because you kind of make it, and as you're making it, because there's so much money riding on it and there's so many different, you know,
voices and
cooks
there,
around the broth. Yeah. That actually, it's like, okay, one day, boom, come in, me and you doing a scene with siblings. Yeah, wicked siblings, quick, ooh, let's just workshop a quick backstory. Yeah. We were raised on the planet, da, da, da. Boom, we do it. And the next day you come in and go, change that, change your plan, you're enemies. You're enemies, first
wow,
time you've
really
ever met.
Planned that
and
well.
There's a bit of sexual tension. Go, let's do that. And then before you know it, you just kind of like, you shoot so many different versions
right.
of it because they're kind of covering bases and testing stuff and they're putting it together in a kind of jigsaw puzzle way. And that actually you don't know, you kind of lose all sight of what you're doing
right.
often on those ones.
Yeah.
Were you surprised then when you see the finished product or whatever? Was there any like, where you're like, what, why did you make that choice? Or
no, actually it was just pleasant surprise because it can be confusing and really challenging making those films. And actually with Rogue One, we shot the whole film. Everyone got on with their lives. Called us a couple of months later and went, yeah, we're going to reshoot the whole thing.
What?
So we shot that film for 6 months.
Fuck.
And then everyone went away.
Yeah.
And then we reshot it the next summer in 6 weeks.
Wow.
I'm not making it up. We reshot about 75% of it.
Oh,
basically,
my God.
Just the big set pieces. They use those.
And totally different
almost totally different.
Wow.
So it's a kind of lesson in a way that sometimes it's just about grit. You just got to keep your head down. Just keep going. Keep the faith. Blind faith.
Yeah.
Keep working. Go through that darkness. And
is it because mentally that's is that a challenge? Then you're
really challenging, man.
Because you're part of a massive. Well, first of all, you're part of possibly, well, probably the biggest movie franchise of all time, right? So you're part of that thing. You're going into that big machine. Are you able to sort of freely express yourself as an actor, or is it are you just sort of thinking, I've just got to get this done the way they want me to do it? I mean, is it...
It's a bit of both, man, because I think, you know, every film set's different.
Yeah.
And it's one of them ones where just when you think you're starting to get the hang of this, you know, like, yeah, I know how to act. I know to, every time you do it, it's like you're having to relearn it. It's like learning a new language every time.
Yeah.
So I think with the bigger films, there's just sometimes... there's a lot more moving pieces.
Yeah.
So it's not like, actually, you know what? What if I just did this, like, you know, stood
improv,
on my head?
Yeah.
Well, let me just make this one up. Oh, I'm feeling it.
They wouldn't indulge
that's
it.
That's not, it's like, well, you can't because there's a crane holding the spaceship
and this is costing
up.
20 million.
And
the
storm, there's 10 stormtroopers ready to explode when you say that line. Mm. And it has to be lined up with that camera.
Yeah.
So, so stressful.
Is it all right if we do it the way we've all agreed?
I'd be permanently stressed out. There's no, that's why there's no blooper reels.
Mate, there's
Star
no fucking
Wars.
Way. There's no way I could do that. Do you know what I mean? Because I find it, because I've done a little bit of acting, right, where I'm just coming off someone's line, right? And even then I feel pressure to deliver it on time. If you're like, we're going to blow that at up
on,
as soon
on
as you do
cue.
Your... Like, do you know what I mean? It's just, fuck that, man. I don't know how you do it. The pressure of that is
I mean, you've got to just, in a way, you know... part of doing those bigger films is you don't feel it's resting all on your shoulders.
The teams
are so big.
Yeah.
In a way, it's more nerve-wracking doing those much smaller films where you're, you feel more, it's on your shoulders.
Yeah.
And it's like you get two takes.
Yeah.
You get two takes. We've got 4 weeks to shoot this whole thing.
The
only thing in this film is your face on the camera.
Yeah.
So smash it every time. You don't get to go and have a rest. You don't... You know, so it's everything's challenging in its own way. The way I try and see it now is because I'm just so hard on myself, and I spent a lot of time being really hard on myself. Is now, in a way, the only way I could keep doing it and not just beat myself up so much that I just thought I've got to stop, is just try and see everything now as like, what can I learn?
Yeah.
I know that sounds really like oh yeah, of course you know obviously I want to try and smash everything I do.
Yeah,
obviously you're competitive, obviously you're driven, you know, want to do the best you can, but I kind of go into it going, right, how am I going to get my ass handed to me this time? Like,
and did you have that thought before you came to this podcast today?
A little bit.
Yeah.
No, and you're doing an incredible job.
I'm learning a lot just right now.
We're both loving it.
I'm really
You did Star Wars. Four Lines, obviously, was a game changer. Do you know what I mean? Like, I think that...
Was it a game changer at the time? It's another funny one, you know, where, like, the time it came out and a couple of people were like, oh, yeah, wicked. And it, like, stuck around in cinemas for a minute.
Mm.
Over the last 10 years, what that film has become now, it's a different thing. And that's another lesson I've learned, where it's like... Everything has its time, you know.
But do you know what? That film just showed a completely different side to that. Do you know what I mean? And I know it was a comedy, but also it had a lot of heart. And that last act of that film is truly heartbreaking. Do you know what I mean? And so, like, did you know at the time that it was going to be...
Well, it is, like you were saying, you know, the comedy aspect of it is what the clincher is.
Because
if you, you can write all the articles you want about trying to convince someone this, that, and the other and show people statistics. Ultimately, you want to bypass someone's brain and get to their emotions.
Yeah.
You know? And that's what Four Lions did. And same with, I guess, what I'm trying to do with the Long Goodbye album as well is like say, well, actually, like, I'm talking about it in a heartbreak kind of terms because that's emotional. We can all relate to that, you know? But it's a weird one because, again, when we were filming that, I've got to just confess my ignorance, to be honest. Like, I didn't really know who Chris Morris was.
Right.
He'd kind of reached out to me after I did my first track, the post 9/11 blues.
Yeah.
And he saw that and he goes, he wanted to meet up and he said, I'm researching this kind of stuff. Because post 9/11 blues, this song I did, was like a satirical rap track about, you know, it had lines in it like post 9/11, watch your back. because I farted and got arrested for a chemical attack. So bars, basically. Yeah. All right. Yes, yes. It was like his joke rap track. And he was like, let's meet up and talk. And then I just kind of knew vaguely he did comedies. But I thought he was like more a Noel Edmonds kind of guy.
Right.
Like, I thought
that's
he'd do that.
That's what got you involved
yeah.
in the project.
Like, no, I was like,
Noel Edmonds is on board.
You know, where he just does that thing where he's like, gotcha, and he give you a gotcha Oscar.
Oh, right, yeah,
and
yeah.
I
right,
thought he
yeah.
was like some spoof thing. And,
oh, shit. Did you think you were going to get?
No, I didn't know. I just thought, this guy seems interesting. Actually seems a bit mad. He was wearing luminous yellow cycle shorts and just like, just, you know, he's just soup, just the most intelligent person you'll ever meet. The coolest, like, just super safe dude. And I've just basically got to know him over 3 years, where he would just kind of every few months go, let's link up for a coffee. Mm. And we just talk about this issue of terrorism, fundamentalism, Islamism, Britishness, whatever. I'd link him up with some of my mates up north. They ended up becoming his researchers. So they'd show him around, like me, you know, meeting a lot of working class Muslims basically up north and all that. And a few years in, we just, at this point, I'm just like, I've got this guy, his mate called Chris. Mm. Mm. He does some comedy stuff. Every now and again, we link up. That's really what my extent of it was.
That's perfect. Yeah.
I didn't really ever really tell people I've got my mate Chris.
Mm. Yeah.
And then he goes, hey, here's this script. And so I thought, again, like, just stupidly, I just thought, like, well, you know, he wants me to give my opinion on it.
Yeah,
I didn't think he wanted me to act in it.
Yeah.
And then I just went, yeah, good script. And he was like, so what do you think? I was like, you know, it's good. And then he offered me to act in it, and I went, nah. So I turned it down.
Why?
Because I just thought, I don't know, like, I don't really want to do a terrorism thing. I just done Shifty.
Right.
And that was like where I was just playing a dude that had nothing to do with terrorism. And at that time, I'd come into an industry at a time when this is the only thing you could get if you're a brown dude.
Yeah,
terrorist number three.
Yeah, of course.
And I was like, mate, I've made a point of not doing that. I'm not doing this. He linked up with me and goes, listen, trust me. Do you trust me? I was like, actually, I do. Yeah, you're super cool. And he was like, that's not, this is a just good thing. It was only then I went and asked a couple of mates, do you know this guy Chris Morris? And they lost their shit.
Yeah.
Because I didn't realise he's this comedy god. He's like the Kaiser Soze of British comedy, isn't he?
Yeah, basically.
And
yeah.
like, and when they were, I was like, really? Chris? He was like, fucking, they showed me his stuff. I hadn't even seen so much of all that stuff he'd done.
Yeah.
And I was like, all right, then let's do it. You know?
Yeah, great.
So it's kind of a roundabout way of getting, and at the time, did I know it would be anything? Nah. Nah, I remember we were joking about it on set, like, yeah, ooh, when this goes to VHS in, like, you know, Shropshire, like, no one's gonna care.
Yeah.
And then because we thought we were dancing without anyone watching, we were just so free.
That's better.
We
yeah.
were just like, just riffing and vibesing. And it's beautiful, man, to see what's become of that film slowly over time, over the years. It's become that kind of, it's kind of a film that more than any other, anything else I've done, people come up to me and say, no lie, that is my favourite ever film.
Yeah.
That's a crazy thing to hear, man. It's beautiful to be part of it.
Tired of ads intruding into your favourite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
As I said, people know you as a, you know, an actor and a film star. So people might be mistaken for thinking, and this guy's doing music, and, you know, he's playing at doing music. But your heritage in the hip-hop scene is, I mean, you've been doing this for a long time, right?
Doing it for a minute, man.
And
for
you, like,
for about 14 years.
Yeah, but you battled and shit, right?
Yeah, I mean, so that's kind of how I started off, basically just, you know, doing local pirate radio and stuff. And then I went to university, I went to Oxford. And that was like, okay, a rapper's aren't meant to really go to Oxford. This isn't really the, terrible look.
Yeah.
And Run Extra was just kicking off, and this kid Dizzy Rascal. This is back when Doneo was doing Farmer Yardi.
Right.
This is back when he was doing the chats with voices. You remember? Farmer Yardi and Brethren Steve, those characters. And I was like, man, I thought, actually, you know what? I can make a bit of money here running club nights. Don't really have drum and bass and hip hop nights here.
Yeah.
So I did that. And it became,
this is at Oxford.
At Oxford. Mm. And so I put on.
What were you studying there?
Politics, philosophy, and economics.
Hip hop.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. With a master's in. And actually, you know, it's interesting hearing George the Poet talk about his experience, and he's got this amazing podcast that he's put together recently that really talks about the idea of growing up as a working class person of colour, but getting into Oxbridge and living that kind of double consciousness, occupying that in-between space. And but while I was at Oxford, basically, I just put on these club nights. So I was just emceeing of jungle and just putting on nights the whole time. As soon as I came back to London, I thought, right, I've got to get a foot on the ladder. So I started battling.
Yeah.
So I did Jump Off.
How was that like?
It was, I mean, all the videos are online. You can watch them. I mean, Jump Off was good. I did pretty good. But there was this kind of controversial ruling where I got booed off stage for saying something that was interpreted as racist, but it was actually a response to something that someone said to me that was racist.
Well, it's funny you say that, because I know about this. Because
people at the time kind of were like sharing it, and people were talking about it. This is 2005, man.
It was a double standard, essentially, where the racism against you was okay.
But I didn't say anything racist.
No, you
back.
Didn't. But
I just said, why are you being racist if you're black?
Yeah.
You shouldn't be being racist.
And then that got interpreted as being racist.
It was kind of like... Yeah, I think people just didn't quite get it. But anyway, I mean, I got down to the last three. That went well. I was champion of Battle Scars that Rasquami put on. I won the competition that he did for that on Radio 1. I was champion of Bombay Bronx as well that Niall used to put on. So I was doing that. And then the first track I put out was Post 9/11 Blues, which was about, you know, just this post 9/11 circus of fear.
What can I do? I got the post 9/11 blues on the telly, nothing but the post 9/11 news. War, Iraq, suicide bombs. Stop hogging the limelight and make some room for my songs. Anyway, it's all reruns. We need a new war. Bush, go get Iran. I heard you talking about your mum. Change the channel, watch some telly for kids. But what's this?
Hi, kids, welcome to Fun Fundamentalist.
In the breaks, and that got inspired. Because the first film I did, Road to Guantanamo, which is about three guys that got locked up in Guantanamo Bay, went to Berlin Film Festival, won an award, came back to Luton Airport, British intelligence officers took us into a side room, started interrogating us, put me in arm locks, grabbed my phone out of my hand. Did you become an actor to further the Muslim struggle? This, that and the other. And I was like, no, I became an actor to get girls. This is not what I had in mind.
Yeah, the Muslim struggle's a side note.
Yeah, that is a Muslim struggle, in a way. You know, 2005, 23 years old. It's, in a way, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
So we're doing that. And it's just all this madness happened. And I went, and I came out, and all these lawyers are contacting me, like Guantanamo lawyers and, you know, journalists saying, you should host a press conference about this, you know, in the House of Commons. This is illegal. You can sue the government.
Yeah.
And I went, I don't want the first time that I'm on TV to be that.
Yeah.
I want to be an artist, man.
Yeah.
And so I put out this track. Went to radio DJs. Radio DJs were like, we love it, we can't play it because we've been told it's politically sensitive. So me as a little hustler, I basically called up all the newspapers and went, yo, they're saying they can't play my fucking track. You better fucking sort this out.
Is that just off your own bat?
Yeah, I was like, fuck that. Why am I not getting airplay if you like the tune on XFM and Kiss FM and all these stations, Radio 1? So they just went in, and before you know it, became a big news story and the track went viral. This is MySpace days. This is 2006. And that's the first track I did. And so, yeah, I've been doing it since then, man. And I took a left turn at one point and I was releasing music on Crosstown Rebels, which is Damien Lazarus's techno label.
Yeah.
I was doing like this experimental kind of techno rap thing. Did Sweatshop Boys with Heems out of Das Racist for you know, a few years back there. And did the American thing, and we toured a lot in the States.
Sweatshop Boys did well, right? I mean,
Sweatshop Boys did really well, man. Yeah. I mean, yeah, we did Coachella, we did little talk shows, we sold out really big venues.
Tie to Katai, vibe in Dubai. We're militant, you're on a milli vanilli vibe. Stopping refugees is just silly blood. What you know about Aeneas in the Iliad? Fled Turkey and he just founded Rome. What if you're drowned in a boat? Yanks eat turkey because your peeps have found a home. What you think all the sounds on your phone from?
And so, yeah, it's a weird one because my music has never really been like my main thing I've known for. It's never been my bread and butter.
Yeah.
It's never been my main calling card. But I've always been doing it, and always been doing it to a level that's just allowed me to reach an audience, travel with it, and grow.
Yeah.
And I think now, in a way, what I'm doing now with my music is kind of like, I don't know how to put it, but it's almost like before, what I was doing with music is I was still playing roles.
Right.
Here's this side of me. He's that character. He's this character. He's the post 9/11 joke rap kind of character. He's experimental, artsy, electronic music fan rapper. He's the, like, you know, Beastie Boys but brown kind of rapper,
yeah, yeah,
doing his Sweatshirt Boys. I kind of feel like now I'm not playing any roles anymore,
right,
and I'm putting it all together. So that's why I'm not releasing music under my old name, Riz MC. I mean, yeah, you could tell how fucking old, like how long I've been doing this from the fact that that was my rap name.
Yeah.
Now it's just Riz Ahmed. It's just my name.
Yeah.
And in a way, I'm kind of taking all the masks off, stop playing all the roles, and it's kind of feels, this record feels more like me than anything I've done before.
Are you putting the music out without any aspirations for it? Are you just going, this is just... Like, are you doing it thinking, I hope this blows up? Or are you doing it because you just want to put that message out there? Or, like, what are you thinking?
I want six Grammys.
Right, yeah. I want
six Grammys. Anything less than that is a failure.
Yeah.
You know what is weird, man? You, like, we're talking about with Rogue One or even Four Lions, like, having mad expectations about a piece of work can be unhelpful.
See what happens,
yeah. Yeah, see what happens, but, like, I'm backing it hard, you know? Like, and I'm glad to see, you know, we've got, like... you know, we got album of the week in like three or four, you know, papers or whatever.
You know what happened there? Riz basically wanted to carry on saying that and then thought, fuck, is this going to look broken?
Yeah, I know. I was like, fucking hell, am I going to do this?
I respect that. You hesitated about it.
I was like, am I going to be this guy?
Yeah.
You can say it.
Yes, re-edit it so that you go, oh, Riz, but you probably had no expectations, but you got album of the week in like three or four places.
I know you hate talking about this, Riz, because you're such a humble dude, but you got album of the week in like three
or
four publications.
I wish you would mention that on the air, man. I mean, it's kind of gross, to be honest, to talk about it. But yeah, I mean, it's been received really, really fucking well, man. I'm proud of it. But more than anything, it's just about bringing in those different sides of you. You know, you were talking about being British Sri Lankan. This has got grime influences and garage influences and jungle influences, but it's also got like Qawwali music and Sufi music and Bollywood music, and do a bit of spoken word thing on it as well, which has always been part of what I do, and rap, and also singing a little bit. Got a track with Jay Sean on there.
Yeah Jay Sean, man.
Yeah, I know, he was like a fucking pioneer.
Yeah,
man.
I know. He's, Jay Sean, like,
what are you trying to say? You just keep saying Jay Sean.
No,
and gasping. Are you a massive fan, Asian, or are you just not feeling him at all?
It's just the Asian, I when Jay Sean first came out, I just couldn't fucking believe Asian people just lost their minds, right? You have to. We've got a fucking, we've got an R&B
Sinatra
star. Yeah. Holy shit, it was crazy.
It was, man. He's an inspiration. We done. So yeah, man, I mean, in terms of aspirations for it as well, I guess, like, just on a personal connection level, I want people to understand how I feel, understand that it's a way that a lot of people feel right now. And I think the film is you know, I think the film does, is a bit of a wake up call, isn't it? When you watch it, you get it.
Yeah, it's one of the most powerful things I've watched in a long time, really.
Oh, thank
it
you,
was,
bro.
And it was, yeah, you can't describe it. You just have to watch it. But it was, you know, I had a visceral reaction to it, you know. Yeah, it's amazing. And the point that you're making is very, very clear, you know. But at the same time, if you do a film like that and you do the album that you're doing, were you prepared for sort of any kind of, I don't know if you've had any or not, but like an inevitable backlash against what you're saying?
It's weird, you know, because when Four Lions came out, people were like, yo, you must have had a crazy backlash.
Yeah.
And actually, no.
Really, yeah.
Actually, nah. Super, like, hood Asian dudes from up north, super posh, like, white dudes from down south, like, whatever. Like, people would just connect to that. And what's been crazy, actually, about the short film is, yeah, I'm sure there's been some trolls and some people hating on it. I haven't seen that.
Yeah.
What I've actually seen is something kind of quite moving, where people are like, this is what I was thinking.
Yeah.
This is a thought that goes through my head. This is what keeps me up at night.
Mm.
And thank you for saying it, because now I know I'm not crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
when you're,
yeah,
like, kind of isolated with your shit. And I think one of the most valuable things that we can do, performers or whatever, is like say something that other people are thinking.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because you just feel a little less alone with that.
Yeah.
So I've just I've been really moved by the response, to be honest, man. I've seen some people say some really, like even what you just said now, it's like, yeah, it means a lot. But the director behind it, I want to talk about him. He's an absolute G. His name's Anil Kharia.
Yeah.
He did the last block of Top Boy. He did Kano's Trouble video. He's just like won an award for his film at Sundance Film Festival. So kind of what you're saying before is like, wow, we've got an Asian R&B star. Yeah. We got Asian Scorsese's coming up, man, as directors. Yeah. And in a way, like, hopefully at some point they'll stop being seen as Asian anything. Yes. And they're British.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They're Asian, but they're also, it's not like just a win for Team Brown.
Yeah, yeah.
That Romesh exists.
Yeah.
It's a win for all of us.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, but I mean, I think like...
But not everyone sees it like that.
No.
People get into the tribalism and they kind of get a bit, yeah.
Yeah, but also I sort of think to myself, like, when I was growing up and I watched Goodness Gracious Me, or I watched even like, you know, I was obviously a big fan of Real McCoy, and then what the Goodness Gracious Me guys did, to me as a kid growing up, you suddenly think, well, Asian people can do comedy, or that's a thing that can happen. And similarly, when you see Asian rappers or film stars and stuff like that, it's exciting, because you sort of think, shit, this is something that, you know, for whatever reason, we haven't seen yeah. before, or seen as much of as we should have done. And so it is exciting. And it feels like it's really pushed on relatively recently. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's about stretching culture for all of us. And I think it should be exciting for all of us. When I saw Crazy Rich Asians, that was exciting for me.
Yeah.
That's exciting.
Yeah.
When I saw that Star Wars had cast, you know, Daisy Ridley and John Boyega, that's exciting for me, because every time culture gets stretched in that way, it gives all of us just a bit more space to be ourselves, to take our masks off, to stop code switching, to be our unapologetic selves, you know. And so, but it's also mad, isn't it, because it kind of feels like culture is moving in two completely opposite directions at 100 miles an hour. It's like, you know, that idea of the universe expanding, like it's going really fast in every opposite direction at the same time, because on the one hand you have that, I mean, the most, you know, bait way of putting it is like, oh, you've got Obama. This is the era of Obama and Trump.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
It's like, it's kind of crazy.
Yeah. Well, the thing is that you look at, for example, you know, if I'm speaking specifically from a comedy point of view, there's loads more Asian comedians coming through and getting on telly and stuff like that. Yeah. Obviously annoying, but it is happening, Jimmy. But like, and some people, like, you know, some people think this is fucking great. I'm seeing more diversity on TV. I'm seeing people that are like me being represented. At the same time, you've got people that are expressing the view where, what the fuck is going on? There's just tokenism. I'm like, you know, if you're a white dude, you can't get on TV. And, you know, like, there's those two opposing interpretations of what's happening. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. It's like, and so that, you know, it's in equal parts inspiring and exciting as it is depressing. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. So it's that kind of...
But there's always going to be those... Any change that happens, man, people are always going to push back against it. Humans don't like change. It's weird, actually. The process of making this album made me think about, actually, how hopeless am I about the way the world is right now. When you think about, okay, I made this album about what's happening in Britain. Oh, shit, look, it's also happening in India. It's happening in America, where soldiers with guns and ICE, you know, troops with guns are going, running in projects in Queens, like deporting, you know, Hispanic people. It's happening all over the world, this feeling of like, get them out, kick them out. You know, you're not welcome here, even though these people helped build this country. And I kind of realised in the journey of making this album is, actually, I'm not hopeless. I'm not.
Mm.
I think things are bad, and I think they're going to get worse. But there's also bad news.
Yeah, that is pretty hopeless.
But I do think that, like, I don't know, maybe I'm becoming a hippie the older I get, but I do think that there's something in, like, you know, young people really, you know, right now, just how switched on they are, how much information they've got access to. It feels like we're kind of waking up to the fact that we're all in this shit together. In some ways, like climate, corona.
Yeah.
I was actually thinking about this, like, with the coronavirus stuff. If everyone can decide to just stop their economies, stop travel, and all this stuff because of corona, the climate movement's going to come on the back of it and go, hang on a minute, Sorry, you stood up for him.
I know.
You stand up for us,
mate.
Now.
It's so incredible how like.
Suddenly you can stop your fact.
I know, but that's the thing, though.
Because that's the thing.
We keep getting told that everyone's panicking about climate change and the environment. People aren't really. Like, you know, do you know what I mean? We're playing at the fringes of what needs to be done, and then as soon as like, I find it slightly depressing that society can be driven to a point where people are physically fighting over toilet rolls so easily.
Yeah,
but you're exactly right. We're suddenly motivated to make wholesale changes. Do you know what I mean? Like to how we behave.
But at least that shows the possibility of really quick collective action and change.
Yeah.
And in a way, like, you know, it's that whole thing, isn't it? Maybe it'll take an alien invasion to stop racism, or maybe it would, you know, take coronavirus to change climate.
It would give us another ethnic group to sort of target.
It would actually. It'd just be boom time for racism. Yeah.
But at least we'd be united, do you know what I mean? Well, if you haven't checked out the album, make sure you check it out. It's an amazing record. What hip-hop do you listen to?
I listen to a range of stuff, man. I mean, I kind of grew up listening to a lot of that kind of early 90s stuff, just nicking my brother's cassettes. That first lyrics I memorized was Wu-Tang's Enter 36 Chambers, that kind of thing. I mean, he was listening to some of that weird, like, horror rap as well.
Oh, back then,
like, Gravediggers.
Yeah. I loved Gravediggers.
That Gravediggers' first album.
I couldn't do it. Have you listened to it recently?
It's quite a strange listen.
Okay, I understand you guys are pleading insanity, claiming demonic spirits possess you to do these hideous murders. Can you please explain to this court how these so-called spirits made you into these raving madmen?
Be a witness as I exercise my exorcism. The evil that lurks within, the sin, the terrorism. Possessed by evil spirits, voices from the dead. I come forth with gravediggers in a head full of dread. I've been examined ever since I was semen. They took a sonogram and seen the image of a demon. At birth, nurses surrounded me with needles and drugged me all up with the diseases of evil.
But hold on, but how are you listening to it? Because I can't get
I
that
don't
first
vinyl.
One. Oh, you had it on vinyl. There you go. Yeah. Fucking, he's a proper head. I had it on cassette. It got destroyed.
Is it not on Spotify?
I don't think it's on Spotify. No.
Banned.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
It's too horrible.
It is pretty full on, that.
Yeah, it is. I didn't go that follow him there, but I went to like the hieroglyphics. I mean, yeah. I don't know, like DOC's Portrait of a Masterpiece.
Yeah.
I just really was into like that fast, kind of athletic kind of rapping. And so then when Jungle and all that came up, I was just all about that. And Shabba and Skibba.
Do you follow them on Instagram?
I don't. Or should I?
Those boys are still living that life, man. Yes. It's so good. I mean, I'll be honest with you, Shabba combines doing a lot of MCing with a lot of fishing. So,
really?
Yeah.
He's fishing?
Yeah.
What a
how
G.
How old is he?
Fuck knows. How old must Shabba be now? He must be 40s,
right? Right.
Yeah.
But it's so good to see, like, they're still...
Yeah, man. Amazing. Like, kings. Just kings. And then I remember I just wasn't really like feeling garage because I was just always like a lyrics head.
Yeah.
And I was like bars, lyrics, which in a way held me back as a rapper myself because you listen to some of my older stuff, like, it's like, all right, mate, it's not a fucking Sudoku puzzle.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's about the feeling and the flow and the vibe. But I could not get on board with garage until I heard Miss Dynamite's Boo.
Right.
And then I was like, oh, okay, I get it.
Yeah.
I get what this is. But I remember back then just listening to a lot of UK hip hop. I remember liking, you know, Task Force, Brain Tax, Rodney P, Black Twang, and the Big Dada stuff. And I think, you know, the first UK person that I was just obsessed with was Roots Maneuver, who's just so ahead of his time. Yeah. So ahead of his time on every level.
Yeah.
Overblown in the zone, come sit the point. Natural shiznit, nobody to join. Step up to the bar and the clean girls know my incredible credible. My new talk tongue, most cool when the world seems highly strong. Sit down in the corner and be beat the drum. We soon get the vision of the big lump sum. It's Saturday morning, you playing the lottery. It could be you, it could be me.
I remember that Thai album, Upwards.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, all that Big Dada stuff I really liked.
You know, you saw that Ty, Rodney P and Black Twang like tour together, right?
Super group.
Can we go?
I think they're gonna do it again. Yeah. Let's go. Kingdom tour.
Done.
Yeah.
Done. But yeah, I mean, I don't know, just taking it to kind of sidetrack into some UK stuff there. But I think with Maneuver, I think it was just the kind of like, I think he's someone who just really taught me about feeling.
Yeah. Well, it's
feeling, flow,
yeah,
and also sound. Like, I always felt like UK rap should sound different to US rap.
Yeah.
And I loved a lot of that old kind of head nod kind of stuff in the, you know, mid late 90s, but a lot of that Big Dada stuff kind of felt like our kind of Def Jux.
Yeah, like, in terms of, like, we've actually got, so rather than
sound,
rather than aping another sound, this is a whole sound that's unique,
exactly,
to the UK.
And that's
right?
What's been so amazing about, obviously, you know, Birth of Grime, dubstep, and, you know, it's drill funny, and everything, yeah, like that. But that was a UK tangent. But I think in terms of what I'm listening to right now, I really like that guy Smino.
I don't know Smino.
Smino, this American rapper, just very, very, like, he could be a jungle MC. Team, yeah, him up with Shabba, see what happens. Follow you, yeah, tell me come through with a follow through. Come on, heard out my pores, you can smell what I pour, licking out of my follicles. 5 a.m. leaving, finally, smiley, about to go cop a 9-piece, limit, pepper, wet to dry my tummy, creamy, got me slutty. She call me her little baby, I call her my little buddy. Hit her up like, come through for a little cutty. Hit her up like, come through for a little cutty. Hit her up like, come through for a little cutty. Very, very, you know, quick, double time, but very much like about flow and melody. And I've always thought, actually, you know, UK rap's a little bit younger than American rap. And so in terms of evolution, you had that kind of, say, raucous era.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, that was, for me, the era that was like, actually, I'm going to do this.
Yeah,
I
want
to do this.
Yeah.
I mean, I love it.
Yeah.
Talib Kweli, Unhigh Tech, Reflection Eternal, that album, yeah, changed my life, I'd say. You know, then the Black on Both Sides album.
Yeah, yeah.
It was that raucous
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah.
I was like, because it wasn't, you know, it felt totally dishonest to me to rap about stuff going on in my neighborhood, even if it was in my neighborhood, because I wasn't from that. That wasn't me.
Yeah.
That wasn't my
yeah.
life. So being able to rap about more esoteric things, I don't know, just from a more emotional place, a more conscious place,
yeah,
that really appealed to me.
Do you know, on that Black on Both Sides album, I know that he probably doesn't like it now, but Miss Fat Booty, right? That song is the first hip-hop, like, love song, I think, that I listened to that I thought, this is actually, I don't feel eggy listening to this, do you know what I mean? Because, like, there have been, like, proper, like, hip-hop love songs beforehand, and, like, I don't want to disrespect LL Cool J, he's obviously his specialist area.
Hey, lover?
I guess so.
Very
but,
cheesy from yeah, track, but
Daddy Kane,
fucking
yeah.
banger.
Yeah, that is
I
true.
Used to bang Hey Lover.
But Miss
Little Cool J Boys to Men.
But Miss Fat Booty is just a straight hip hop. Do you know what I mean? I don't know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It was like,
man, I met Mos Def right 3 times.
Right.
Let me
I would
tell
find
you
that incredible.
Let me tell you my 3 Mos Def stories.
Oh, great.
Please.
Right.
It's like a Chappelle special. Eh?
So first time I meet Mos Def.
Yeah.
I'm touring. I'm supporting Dizzy Rascal and Mos Def and Giles Peterson at Warehouse Project in Manchester.
Right.
Get on, biggest show I've done with that album. Smash it, goes really well. Come off stage, watch them. Mos's DJ sees me. He's like, yo, you know, that was real. I was like, thank you, safe. Wait for Mos to come off. I'm literally like prepping myself. Like,
right, yeah.
I'm going to give him my CD.
Yeah.
I'm going to do it. Yeah. I'm going to give him my CD. He's going to come off. I'm going to do it. He comes off stage. Loads of people start coming around him. I think, oh no, I had to cut through. I go, assalamu alaikum. Yeah. And he looks at me, he goes, oh, alaikum salam. And then in that moment, about 15 women just like swamp him. And he just gets whisked off towards his dressing room. I'm like, fuck, how am I going to get my CD?
Yeah.
So I go to my bag to get my CD and I realise, I actually don't have my CDs on me.
This is an incredibly badly prepared.
Gutted. So
sure,
gutted. But I had my iPod.
Right.
I paid good money for that iPod.
You're not going to give him your phone.
I said, I'm going to give him my iPod.
Holy shit.
So I go find his tour DJ and I'm like, listen, mate, will you please, I've left it on this tune, yeah? I need you to take it to him. Play it to him. Just take the iPod, bro. Just take it. And he's like, you're fucking crazy. And I just went, nah, please just give it to him. I give it to him. He goes, all right, I'll make sure, I promise, bro, man, it's my iPod, innit? Like, I'm not going to get that back. Play it to him. He goes, all right, cool, I will. So I let go of it, kiss it goodbye. I'm like, well, all right, and that's that. You know, I've done it. Just let it out.
Pretty admirable,
universe.
By the way. Yeah, yeah. A very admirable roll of the dice on
it. I mean, I was just like, I just wanted to hear it. I didn't even give him my number or anything.
Yeah.
Anyway, 4 a.m, the night's finishing, everyone's getting on the tour buses. I see the DJ. I'm like, oh, we can, did you give it to him? And he goes, ah, oh, no, he went home. Just gives me the iPod, ducks. Just like heartbroken. I'm like, nah, man, I was ready.
Did he say it as blasé as that?
Yeah, he was like, huh? Mos? Oh, no, he bounced. gig. He just, afterthought, gives me the iPod back. I was like, well, if I hadn't have asked, you would have just nicked my iPod.
Yeah.
Take that off him. Right. Next time, so that's the, I've fucked this story up already because that's the second time I've seen him.
Jeez,
the first time I've seen him, it's the first time I see him, he's in a play, right? Top Dog Underdog at the Royal Court Theatre. Wait afterwards, like a fanboy with a script. Go, please, can you sign this autograph? He's signing it. He's like, where are you from? This now, go, what's the Black Jack Johnson project about? Da 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 da. You're going to be, he's like, I'm going to do some ballads, some funk stuff. Da, da, da. He's like, asking my name. Da. He signs it. I'm like, oh my God, I got my hero, Most Def. I'm like 19. I'm like, listen, I'm a rapper and actor as well.
Yeah.
Get him to sign my script. He ducks off. I look at it. He hasn't written my name. He hasn't written his name. He's just written Brooklyn 1.
Is that like in a tag or
he just writes Brooklyn 1 and I'm like, no one's going to fucking believe this is Mos Def. That's bullshit. What the fuck am I going to do with that? That's the first time I met Mos Def. Idiot says the other way around, right?
Oh, well,
that's
yeah,
the first
yeah.
time I met him. The second time I meet Mos Def, Warehouse Project, right. da, 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 all that happens, yeah. And the third time I meet Mos Def was at this BAFTA after party.
Nice.
My mate Sohail, who's like a, he writes about hip hop and writes all these books and stuff. He was like, yo, you know, me and my boy are going to be DJing at this party. You're going to come? I'm like, nah. I'm like, come, man. I want to come to this party. It's like a BAFTA. He's like, just come. And he goes, all right, cool. So I turn up and I see, and his boy is Yasin Bey, Mos Def. He just forgot to mention that.
Yeah.
And I just got to meet him, finally. And from the time of the first story to the last story, it's 10 years.
Right.
And finally, the third time, I just got to finally meet him, just shake his hand. Mm. And I was thinking, should I tell him about the iPhone story and the script story? I thought, nah, maybe leave it.
Left it?
But yeah, might come off as a bit of a mug. Just pretended like I hadn't been stalking him for a decade, trying to give him, my
certainly
electronics.
The conversation sounds.
Oh, how you doing? Just make out like I'm vaguely familiar with his work.
Yeah.
Oh, you rap, right? Okay, yeah. This kind of thing.
How was the chat? Good.
It wasn't great, to be honest, man. Yeah, it was very brief. Yeah,
did he give anything in the conversation?
There isn't a happy ending to this story, is there?
We won't have him on the podcast. That's the lesson.
We won't have him.
No, we won't have him on the podcast.
No, it wasn't.
Sort of in showing solidarity.
Fuck that. Throw me under the bus, man. Get him on. Don't do that for me. I listened to that episode. No, no, listen. It wasn't that he didn't have any chat. It was just a loud party, and it was just a bit,
never the right place.
It was. I was feeling awkward because I've been stalking him for a decade, and I didn't know how to, you know, quite broach that.
Now you're on to Romesh.
What does that mean?
Stalking wise.
Sorry.
Deep callback.
Yeah, it was. It took me a moment. To...
He's ahead of us.
Yeah.
You know, one thing I wanted to say to you, bro, is I really love the work you've been doing in mental health and with hip hop and mental health and all that kind of stuff. My brother's a psychiatrist. And, you know, obviously, hip hop can be a world of like machismo and masculinity, and we don't talk about our vulnerability and our feelings and that. And it's fucking toxic, obviously, because like when you're isolated, when those you're alone with those voices in your head, mad shit can happen. So yeah, I just really love that you've been talking about that. And it seems like a generation of people have been talking about that as well. You know, David, Psychodrama, Stormzy talking about depression, and you know,
when I was at uni, I was like, I got counselling. I was going, like, my family were going through a lot of shit stuff, and I thought I need to see somebody. And at uni, they had like a counsellor laid on. And so I went to see a counsellor, and I remember my mum, just when I told her about it, she got terrified because she thought, oh my God, my son's going mad.
Yeah,
you know, that's her, that was her initial reaction to it. And so I think for, you know, in the Asian communities, I just don't think it's, men and in particular Asian communities just don't feel comfortable about talking about that sort of thing, or didn't. And it sort of feels like it's changed then. But, you know, like, I still think, I'm hoping that this isn't like a fad, do you know what I mean? Because it feels like everybody feels comfortable to talk about it now, or we're moving towards that, and then we'll move back away from it. Because the truth is, I've got friends of mine that still won't, they don't want to fucking talk about mental health, do you know what I mean? And like, I think it's going in the right direction.
Yeah, I think so, man. I hope there's a permanency to it, though. Yeah, I think there has been a shift, and now kids talk about it, you know. Yeah, that's not good for my mental health and all that. I'm like, whoa, we never have spoke about any of that stuff. So,
how do you find dealing with it? Bearing in mind that you're such a, you know, your profile being what it is, you're on social media, you're pretty active on social media. Do you find that difficult dealing with
I go in and out on the social media, man. I was just saying, you know, I've released this album, so obviously I've kind of gone back on social media for that. But a lot of the time, I just kind of cut it out of my life, you know, just because, I mean, I don't know, someone described it as just like giving the world your phone number, isn't it?
Yeah. Mm.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I just, I found that before, when I had something I wanted to get off my chest and I really wanted to share with the world, I'd write a song.
Yeah.
And then what I was doing was every time I wanted to get something off my chest, I'd tweet it. And so it's something good about sitting with a thought for long enough and struggling with it and unpicking it for long enough that it can grow into something.
Yeah.
As opposed to knee-jerk spitting it out there straight away. So that was just me personally. Now, there's a lot of amazing stuff about it as well. I mean, I'm just learning, you know what I mean? Like, people putting you onto stuff. But I've found that it's actually better for my kind of, like, calm, sense of calm, to, like, be selective about when I go on it and go, all right, you know what, this weekend, whatever, I don't know, it's the Oscars or something, I want to go on and see what people are saying about it, or but not having it there constantly. That's just me. Yeah, what about you?
I do agree with you, you shouldn't be on it all the time, but I am. Well, I have to, like, at the moment, I'm going through a really bad time of it. Like, I just sort of...
Why?
Because I thought to myself... So when I started doing my last tour, I was sort of anxious about how that tour was going to get received. And so I thought to myself, I'm going to come off social media and I'm just going to focus on making this show as good as I possibly can. And I was doing this show and I was enjoying myself and I got to a point where I was comfortable with it. And I thought, let me go back on social media. And so I went back on everything, and it's just not good. I don't think it's good. I don't think the positive and the negative stuff is good for your mental health. I just don't. You know, I know that's a cliche, but I don't even think it's about it going bad. Sometimes I don't even think it's about. You know, when somebody says something in the media that they get shit for, and then they get supposedly cancelled or whatever. I don't even think it's just about that. Yeah. I think it's about being on it at all and having that open thing. I can't see how it was good for you. So now the way I try and engage with it is I put stuff out and try not to look at anything that comes back. You know, I'll post a picture on Instagram or I'll put a joke up on Twitter or whatever and just don't follow it up. I don't give a fuck what people... Not I don't give a fuck, that sounds a bit callous, but what I mean is I'm not going to then...
Have a conversation. Scour.
Yeah, I just don't... Yeah. I just think, you know, why do I care what these fucking peasants think of what I'm putting out there? Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Should be fucking grateful.
Exactly. Yeah. I've blessed you. I've blessed you, fucking scum. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. You know what I'm talking about.
Right, that's a nice way to run everything off.
And what have you got coming up next? You're talking about a film, but you can't talk about that now.
Yeah, I've got a film coming up. Well, actually, the next film that I've got coming out is called Sound of Metal.
Right.
And I play a drummer. So I had to learn how to play the drums for that for 6 months.
That's a good skill to have.
Yeah, but I didn't keep it up.
It's a good skill to have had. You once
have. Yeah, yeah, exactly. It's a good story.
It's good for publicity.
Did you ever get to a point where you were able to drum and rap simultaneously?
I actually didn't try it. I really felt like that would have been a weird Limp Bizkit kind of flex, and I didn't try and do it.
Yeah. Nothing weird about
it. I don't think this is as cool as Riz thinks it is, though.
That's why you forgot to play how to play your drums.
When's that out, then?
Sound of Metal will be out in August.
Right.
So yeah, man.
Okay, we'll check that out.
Actually, there's another thing I learned.
On tour?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah,
that's good. Thank you. Well reminded.
Well done.
So
mate.
Thanks.
No one told me.
You said like three things today.
Three,
four maybe, and all four of them. I'm about to compliment you. Cool. All four of them have been fucking exceptional. We did the callback that we couldn't even. Yeah. It took us a while to find them. Helping Ridge with his promotion, and there was some other shit about.
Fucking smashed it today, bro. Yeah.
I like this positivity.
Yeah. No, I'm not. I'm just being real with you.
No, I love it.
Really good stuff. Well
so
done.
Can I just get back to promoting my shit for a minute?
Thanks, guys.
So
he was great, though.
Yeah, he was. I'm going on tour. I'm actually doing a show in Manchester and in New York. That's going to be like a kind of a. It's a gig, but it's also like a theatre show, like an immersive theatre thing, like a whole experience madness thing. And I'm playing LA and London as well.
How do we find out those dates? Your website?
Yeah, it's all on.
When's London?
It's on Instagram.
We want to go, don't we?
Yeah. London's 14th April. Come.
Nice. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
You mean it? Okay, cool. Let's
we might be there.
What do you mean?
Depends how many tickets Jay Sean needs.
Yeah, we'll just surprise you. Yeah,
yeah, all right.
It'll be fun, won't it?
Yeah.
Well, listen, Riz, huge fan of yours.
You too, bro.
Come again.
Music's great.
Yeah.
You've got to check out this album. You've got to watch this film. It's just brilliant. And so make sure you check it out. Riz, thank you so much for coming
thank
on,
Thank you,
man.
Bro. Much love, man. Thanks, guys.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.